And why don't we get my team up here so I don't really have to answer any. And Bernie, would you like to start with Japan and why we're continuing to invest and be in Japan? I thought I'd save you that. I like our chances. It is a huge market. It is a fragmented market. And we have shown, as we have reduced prices and reduced expenses, that we can take market share. And I believe, I have 100% confidence that either Ed or the person who follows him will translate that into profitability, and that 3 years from now, you will be sitting here saying, I am glad I recommended that, Lee, that you guys stay in Japan. If it was a market like Germany, I think we have already showed you we are willing to say that we made a mistake and we're going to get out. But I would tell you at this point, not only did I not feel that Japan was a mistake when we started, I went this summer, I toured the stores in Japan, I talked to Ed's team, Mike was just there last week. I am not comfortable, but I am very much positive about the direction that we are going. And I would hope that Ed, are you still here? And I would hope that Ed is not comfortable, because we have work to do. But it is worth winning in Japan. And we can win, and we have shown when we sell for less and provide good service and have great associates in a store that we can win. And we can be profitable and get the returns you want. And that's why we are staying in Japan today. We're not going to leave Japan today. Thank you.
Okay, are there no more questions?
All right.
Let's go back here.
Great, thanks. Lee, to follow on your point, it's Greg Malek from Morgan Stanley, on the thoughtfully aggressive comment that you ended with. I think that's what you said, thoughtfully aggressive. I'm going to ask you to look a little bit ahead. What would potentially make you want to get aggressive? Would it be having a unique retail brand or supplier brands or a part of the world, a retail partner that you never could have acquired that you might be able to get it cents on the dollar? Just give us an idea of...
Well, I think that's... You know, Shoei's going to have a heart attack and Hyde is Hyde up here too. Normally Hyde hides. There in this environment... There probably are things that the government might allow you to do that they would not have allowed you to do in the past. And if that occurred, we would take an appropriate look at those things. But, you know, there are people who have gone out of business who historically it would have been a real estate play, another real estate play, but now stores are just closing. Well, are those some of those stores things that Eduardo's going to want to look at or that Doug is going to want to look at? And just because times are difficult, since we have the strength in our balance sheet, maybe there's some of those that we're going to be maybe in the driver's seat to be able to participate in and to negotiate very good rents. So those are the kinds of things I think you're going to, when I say thoughtfully aggressive, I'm talking about like John Fleming. You know, he gets up in the morning and he says he decides he wants to buy $100 million worth of something. And it's in the core of where that customer's going. That's what I mean. And we're going to be thoughtful. We're going to go where that customer's going, and we're going to invest deeply where the customer's going. But on the fringe, we're going to be thoughtful about the fringe, because right now the fringe is just irrelevant to a customer. And so you're thoughtful about that. Is that, Fleming, is that a fair characterization of your approach? Or did he leave? Is that fair?
It is.
All right.
As a follow-up, could that actually be outside of retail? Could it be just helping your customers save money and live better, maybe doing something that's not pure retail or traditionally?
It would have to be aligned. We have looked, what do we call it, outside the fence?
Expanding the fence.
Expanding the fence, which really was way outside. What I think what we've proven over the years is we're a pretty good retailer. But we have to remember that that's what we are, is a pretty good retailer. And so, you know, Jane Thompson and her team have taught us that building on to that and doing financial services within an appropriate way is a great opportunity for us. And so there may be other things. I think the 1-800 contact, do we even talk about that? It's not secret, is it?
No, it's not. Because
I can never remember what they tell me to say and not. But the 1-800 contact is one where we took a step out, and some of the other things that we're doing like that. I think those are great. I think those are significant opportunities for Walmart, and we have enough capacity in our balance sheet to be thoughtful about it. I wouldn't want anybody to walk out here and think these guys are going to be nutty. We're not. But maybe there are going to be things we would never have been able to do in the past that make sense for our customer and for this company and give you the returns you're looking for that we would look at.
Okay. In the past, you've tried to get a bank charter. You've gone after that. Things have changed out there at this point. I mean, does those conversations change at all with the government? Is there an opportunity here? I mean, there's probably some capital to be used in the industry.
I don't, I just don't know. I'm in some ways kind of glad. You know, we were getting ready to do mortgages like a week before one of them went away, and that was going to be our partner. And so we're glad.
Jane, what you meant
thank
to say
you
was
not doing that. But I don't. I just don't know that the political climate has changed, and I don't know about our appetite, Eduardo, to really own a bank. Some of the things have changed in the background that eliminate some of the savings that we would have had. Is that okay? So I think you have to be. You just have to be careful. I'm not that wound up about a bank personally.
And I guess when you look, you talked a little bit about going beyond retail. Is there any part of retail right now that you think you're not serving that you could that makes sense? I mean, you're starting with the smaller market, the market side, and so.
I think Eduardo can answer that after he can rebut my statement. It appears that as this population ages and as energy prices increase, and I think all of it, I just went down and fueled up at lunch and saved about $20. I only fuel about once every 6 or 8 weeks. I saved about $20 from when I last did. My view is that over the long term, regardless of what fuel prices are today, over the long term, they only go up. And that makes me think that Eduardo's and his team are working on smaller stores and smaller formats and what Mike is doing and leading the way internationally, it causes me to believe that there's probably a different way you'll end up serving your customer. You'll be pleased you have the super centers forever. But there's probably getting closer. Do you agree with that? Getting closer to the customer?
I would, starting with the fact that there's something that maybe we didn't communicate well yesterday, Lee, and that is if you were to take our market share today in the 15 largest, because you're discounting the U.S. right now, and, that really gets my, puts my job in jeopardy, so I have to clarify. If you think about the 15, what we call largest markets in the U.S., and you take the market share that we have in those and compare that to the average market share that we have across the nation, the difference, so the available market, if we had the right vehicle, and I'm not talking about the 15 necessarily, it's the 15 what we call opportunity markets, not necessarily just the most urban or less urban. It's the largest 15 opportunity markets. We take that market share. The available market is bigger than the retail, entire retail market of Russia and India combined. Larger than the China market. So don't discount the U.S. as a growth vehicle. Yeah. Because there's plenty of market share to be had in just the 15. I'm not going wild here. I'm not saying we're going to double our market share. I'm just saying if we had the same market share on those 15 opportunity markets that we have across the nation, that would represent an opportunity larger than the entire retail business of India and Russia combined. So there you have it.
This is the conversation we have when we're allocating capital between Mike and Eduardo.
Sorry, Mike. I didn't include it in the presentation because Michael may take it out.
But it could be a different It could be a different size store, Eduardo.
Absolutely.
Could be a different kind.
That's a big one because it's one that would be right in our space. So it's one that we understand how to do it. We have the infrastructure to serve it, the distribution network to do it. But it will require a different format. And one thing that you didn't see yesterday also is that if you think of our plan is not a three-year plan. It goes beyond that. And while we are focused in the near future, we're focused on what you saw that we're doing with the current stores and new stores that we share with you that are going to be smaller. The second platform of our growth, future growth, is what we call the high-efficiency store. And that store is going to be a lot smaller. It's going to have a very large component of site-to-store. And you're going to be then serving the market, Lee, with a very different vehicle. That also would combine something that it's the second largest growth opportunity for the U.S., and that it's retail, but it's different type of retail. It is very small stores, actually almost no stores, because it would be the online opportunity. Online is, without any doubt, a very significant opportunity for us and one that you will see us invest much more in the future.
Yep. Back there, Adrian.
Thanks. Adrian Shapiro, Goldman Sachs. Lee, it sounds as if we might be getting another fiscal stimulus program. Could you share with us what we learned from the last one, what perhaps you would do differently to capitalize on the next?
That is, from a business standpoint, I mean, you could see it with our customers. It is clearly something that is needed with our customers. And when our customers got those checks, I think, John, you may want to help me, or Bill, but in a lot of cases, it wasn't the people who were running out and buying a flat screen TV. They were coming out and buying the necessities of life. True? We saw big increases in things like diapers and formula and the things people need. So you could tell that it wasn't just a windfall. It was, for a whole lot of people, something that meant something to how they were getting by in their everyday life. As it was, particularly then, I'm going to go back to our customer, which I don't want to undersell because we serve the whole spectrum, but we have an awful lot of customers who live paycheck to paycheck. And when you had the price of fuel at over $4 a gallon, and then, you know, and utilities at home going up, it really pressed that group of people hard. And so the stimulus check really did matter. And at the same time, there were people who got those checks who did buy the TVs. Gary Severson and that group had done a wonderful job of positioning themselves to be able to take care of that. Jane Thompson, her team, to be able to cash the checks, and Bill and the stores and being ready to handle them. I think the learning we would do would then be to be able to translate the efficiency of those things and then to get the merchandise out there that the customers want within the price points they want, analyzing what did sell, what didn't sell. The thing that will be different, though, is if fuel is, I used premium because the price is down this time, but I paid $2.50 a gallon and it's been $4.38 or something like that. The one thing that will be different is that if people are paying less for fuel, what is the impact that has on them? And will this, if they do a stimulus, will it be as much towards basics or will it be more towards holiday? That would be the difference. But my understanding is they'd like to gear it up and do it quickly. It certainly, from us, is something that has a meaningful impact on the business we do. So, and I can't speak to whether or not it's, you know, it's needed and justified in the impact on the overall budget. Bernie had one too.
Bernie Sosnick, Guilford. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to ask a question myself. you've made tremendous progress in positioning Walmart as the part of the solution for sustainability. Mm. And certainly with health and wellness, with the reduction in generic pricing. introduction of low generic pricing. How can you build on that to be the solution for health and wellness issues that certainly will be part of the next administration? And could you help us out a little bit in understanding the arrangement that Walmart has with Caterpillar?
Who would want to handle the Caterpillar? Because there are people, John, Dr. John, also known as Admiral. He was the Admiral of the U.S. Health Services.
I was, sir. Privileged to serve. On the Caterpillar, we have... Caterpillar, as you know, is an innovative company that has always committed to trying to find new ways to offer health benefits to its employees. Great leadership in that company. We have worked directly with them in such a way that we have negotiated prices on our pharmaceuticals that allow Caterpillar to save money, the employer, in such a way that it can now incent its employees to fill their prescriptions at Walmart. That's basically how it works. That's the arrangement. It's a pilot. I will emphasize that we are monitoring the impact of the arrangement. And if it works for Caterpillar and for Walmart, and importantly for the employees, the customer that utilize this arrangement, then possibly we might look at expanding it as we go forward.
Is there a PBM involved?
So Caterpillar has a PBM that manages all of the administrative functions associated with this arrangement. But in this arrangement, it's basically about us selling pharmaceuticals at retail prices directly to the employer rather than going through a third party.
And John, what you might want to clarify is, so what's the benefit for the Caterpillar employee?
Ah, yes. Yeah. So... we saved money for Caterpillar in their employee benefits program as a result of their working directly with us, avoiding a middleman. They elected to incent their employees by giving them a differential copay, meaning if a Caterpillar employee fills their prescription at Walmart, they pay much less out of pocket than if they had gone to another site to fill their prescription. In actual fact, I think most of their Caterpillar employees pay $0
yeah.
if they fill their prescription at Walmart.
All right. As far as the overall issue of health care in the United States, I think the role that we have to play, first of all, in representing you, our shareholders, is to ensure that what we end up with is a level playing field. That's the first thing that we want. And today it is not a level playing field because you have 45 to 48 million uninsured Americans who are getting health care. And so it is those of us who provide health care who are subsidizing that payment. And so we have to play in a way that protects the shareholder and protects the company and makes sure that this is what we think of as a level playing field. And then secondarily, because we have a model, Linda Dillman has just done a wonderful job in healthcare, and we have a model that is extraordinarily efficient. It provides good healthcare, but it is really efficient. And one of the things we want to do is make sure that you don't end up with something that if you manage it well and you manage your cost well, you end up having to somehow pay a percentage penalty because everybody needs to pay the same percentage. So how do you incent companies to have health programs for their people, wellness programs, and those kinds of things? And then how do you work with government to ensure that you are incenting the right kind of behavior among companies and not creating a bureaucracy which simply transfers total cost? We think through portable health care records, which we've offered to our associates this fall, that is one of the things we can do. We think by working with the group that we're working with to get healthcare records out there for everyone to eliminate this, I think the number is $500 billion of administrative cost in the U.S. just on healthcare. I think that's what it is, 500 or 650. that we can participate in those kind of things, and that because we have been able to do this with the Communications Workers Service Employees Union and other companies, General Mills and others, we've been able to show that we can bring a coalition of people who are not naturally partners into this and deal with it in a way that is straightforward and not self-serving on anybody's part. So I think, like Leslie talked about, if we can get at the table, we can make a contribution in this. And then beyond that, do clinics ever amount to what we would all hope they could be? Those kinds of things, I just don't know. Eduardo might have a better answer. I just don't know at this point. I think the jury is still out. In some places, they work and work well. Other places, they just don't seem to be very effective.
I think that the business model that most companies that operate in that space, the business model they're using, is one that has not proven yet to work. Now, the one that we have just recently started, which is slightly different because it leverages the brand equity of the local hospital as well as the expertise of the local hospital to provide the nurse practitioners for the clinic, that is one that we feel that has a lot more potential because you both have the trust of the customer in terms of the brand of the hospital, and at the same time you have the professional management of the nurse practitioners, which you know, some private equity firms that have entered that space might not have.
Other questions?
No more questions, then we have one.
Deborah.
Deborah Weinswig at Citigroup. Lee, kind of adding on to Bernie's question with regards to sustainability, obviously Walmart has really taken lead here in the competitive landscape, not only domestically, but really in the world. Can you talk about what you're really doing in the store and outside of the store to communicate that to your customers?
No, I can't. But somebody will be able to. What I've been involved in is just the day-to-day nuts and bolts of the sustainability thing, and it just is awesome. I mean, you get people who come in and they'll show you. I had a person come in with a new cereal box, which is a secret until January, and it's going to save like 20% of the packaging. And you just think about it. If you take 20% of the packaging out of cereal and you did that worldwide, how much package that is? And they reconfigured the box so that you can, it has less of the dead space in it as it settles. And we just get supplier after supplier coming in about packaging. And what we did last week in China is, we're behind. We should have done it earlier, but it is so cool. What we did with our group, in Matt Kistler and the group that's heading that, and Leslie, is that we had suppliers there who might have been scared to death because we actually laid out a commitment on their part, and we laid it out firmly. But we had NGOs there. We had people with expertise there, and we had a show outside the hotel where people were able to go and see how they could do the clean water and how they could do this and how they could do that, how they could save energy in their factory. And so it wasn't just a matter of saying, you're going to do this. It was a matter of saying, we're partners in this. We expect this. And here are people who have either companies or NGOs who have the expertise to be able to do it. We are going to make an extraordinary difference. I think, I'm going to come back to quality because here's what I say, and I just believe it. If you're dealing with a factory that hires underage workers who does not pay overtime, who does not pay taxes, and who dumps their residue and chemicals in the river, what in God's name makes you think they're not cheating you? Because they've cheated everybody else they've dealt with so far. And ultimately, I believe they'll cheat the customer in the quality of the product. And I think sustainability, through the lens of sustainability, you can reform how you think of quality and you can enhance the image of this company dramatically while still having great prices. Because what we're finding is through the lens of sustainability, you take waste out of the process and it doesn't cost as much more, if any, than what you thought it was going to. And so I'm excited about it. I'm excited about what our merchants are doing in organics. My wife was in a store in Florida on Saturday, and this woman said, you need to go to this other retailer. You need to go to this retailer and buy this CD or something. I don't know what they were talking about. She forms relationships in short periods of time at these places. And is this being webcast? But anyway, and my wife said, I'm not allowed to shop there. And the woman said, you're not. And she said, no, I only shop at Walmart. And the woman said, you know, I never shopped at Walmart until 3 weeks ago. My mother told me I have to go to Walmart. And she said, I've been there every week now for 3 weeks. I've spent over $100 every time. Their prices on their organics are unbelievable. Because she was shopping organics at a well-known, more expensive store that is known for organics. And it cost a whole lot more. But anyway, so I think this all comes around. And I know that there are what we would refer to at Walmart, and I call myself this, so I'm not Maggie talking about it, but old-timers who look at that new store and say, are you still overreaching? And I say that, you know, first of all, times are different. And if you looked at the price points on the end cap in that store, it was made for average working people. They weren't $80, $100, $120 end caps. And that in today's environment, it is not just people who have money who want organics, not just people who have money who want less packaging. What we're finding is that people care about the environment when they can afford to do something about it. And I think the lens of sustainability pulls all that together, whether it be organics, packaging, the elimination of waste out of the back of the store, the elimination of utility costs by being more efficient and how we use utilities. It makes us a better company. And so I'm obviously excited about it. And quite honestly, when I gave that speech in 2005, I had no idea that it would be. It just felt right. But I had no idea it would be as transforming as it is. Nor did I know that so many young people were waiting at Walmart for this older generation to take action. I did not know that. We have time for another one?
One more. Back there.
Thanks. Neil Curry from UBS. I just wondered, Leslie commented last night a little bit on the Freedom of Choice Act, and I wonder whether, I know you don't like it, but if it was to go through, is this something which could cause you to have less sleep at night? And is it something which could cause you to change the plans that you've outlined in the last few days?
No. No and no. I thought it was titled the Forced Choice Act. Here's the way I look at it, and then Leslie can give you the actual Walmart position. At my age, I'll be 60 in a few months. At my age, I think it's irrelevant. Sam's Club, Associate Opinion Surveys, our people feel good about the leadership they have at Sam's. Walmart stores, opinion surveys, I don't think have ever been higher. They feel good about what's going on. The bonus payments are very good. Our wages are very competitive with what we see in the new union contracts. We're very competitive, and the leadership that Bill and his team have given to the field, and you don't get to see Hank and everybody else, but they've done a really nice job, Don and others, in building that relationship with associates. As an American, as a U.S. citizen, I worry about it. As long as it's done and it's level playing field, it's not that it's going to be so harmful to Walmart. But as a U.S. citizen in a globalized economy, making this country less competitive, bringing coercion and force into the workplace and having people go to people's homes and coerce them in a way that causes them to be uncomfortable in the workplace when they go back to work, how do you justify doing those kinds of things at the very time when this country needs to be its most competitive? That's what bothers me. It'll be generations in the impact it has on this country. And it won't be positive. I guarantee you that. It will not be positive. But for Walmart, in the short term and in the long term on a relative basis with our peers, we're going to run this business. Our associates are going to be productive. We're going to reach out. We're going to have relationships with our associates. We're going to care about them, and we're going to serve customers. And we are not, we like driving the car, and we're not going to give the steering wheel to anybody but us. Now, you can give the actual answer, Leslie.
If I've learned anything in politics, it's always to let your supervisor have the last word.
Yeah. And in, you know, Leslie's career in politics, he was on the Dukakis campaign, the Gore campaign, the Kerry campaign.
Never mind. And,
he's picking it back up.
And just missed the Johnson campaign, which was successful. But we appreciate all of you. You know, we will continue to do our best to take care of customers so that they can save money and live better. Thank you all.